The GLSA acknowledges that the Melbourne Law School is situated on stolen Wurundjeri land of the Kulin Nation, of which sovereignty was never ceded. We pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging. Hi, welcome to the fifth episode of the Think Global Careers in International Law podcast series, brought to you by the Global Law Students Association and Ashurst. This episode explores what it is like to work in various common law jurisdictions and work on large-scale global transactions. Ashurst is a prominent multinational law firm with headquarters in London. It is a truly global law firm with 27 offices in 15 countries across Asia, Australia, Europe, the Middle East, and North America. Welcome to this episode of GLSA's Think Global Careers in International Law podcast series. My name is Mimi and I'm one of the co-ops for the GLSA events and engagement portfolio. Today I'm speaking to Madeline from Ashurst, an international law firm and GLSA sponsor. Welcome, Madeline. Thank you for joining us on the podcast today.
Thanks, Mimi. No worries.
Just before we jump into our discussion about your legal career at Ashurst, would you mind firstly introducing yourself and telling us why you decided to do law?
Sure. I'm Madeline DeGaris, but I prefer to go by Maddie because I feel like Madeline is the name I get called by my mum when I'm in trouble. So all my clients, friends, everyone knows me as Maddie. I have been practicing law since 2009, which sounds like a long time ago now. It feels like it was quite recently that I started. And I actually always wanted to be a lawyer. When I was really young, I watched like Ally McBeal and stuff like that. And I just always wanted to be a lawyer. I like debating. I like talking too much, talking too quickly. And everyone said I'd be a lawyer. So, just one of those kids who always wanted to be a lawyer, did law, became a lawyer, and I've been lawyering ever since.
That's really good. I get told the same thing. Everyone told me, oh, I'm like, oh, okay.
You're not sure whether it's a compliment or not when they tell you that, but just take it as one.
So was working internationally something that you always aspired to do, and sort of how did that come up for you?
It actually wasn't, to be honest. I'm from Melbourne originally, and I went to university in Canberra, and I started working as a lawyer in Sydney and then came back to Melbourne. So I was sort of happy with enough movements in that sense. And when I was at Blake Dawson, as Ashurst was then known, I just got a call one day from a recruiter from here, but he was recruiting for a job in New York. And I hadn't even been thinking about it, didn't know whether I wanted to do it. It maybe was slightly less common back then when I did it. But I thought, oh, I'll have a crack thinking I wouldn't get it. when I got the offer, I thought, well, I can't really say no to New York. So I sort of went, and that's sort of how my international career sort of started. So maybe a bit different to most people who have that aspiration from day dot. I sort of was quite happy living in Melbourne, to be honest. But when the opportunity arose, I felt like I couldn't really say no.
Yeah. So what do you think was the most valuable thing you've learned from your international experience in New York and then onwards? I know you moved then to Hong Kong and London, was it?
Yeah, so I did New York, then London, then Hong Kong, and was away for a total of about 4.5 years. In terms of valuable experience, I mean, I think it's good just getting to work with different people, different cultures, different work styles. It might not be that all the deal experience you get overseas is that relevant when you come home, because it might be, you know, different governing laws or different markets. But I think the experience of working with different people and different styles and understanding how people operate is really valuable on the work side. And I think also just on the personal side, I mean, living overseas, traveling, learning about different cultures, even, you know, in New York and London, people might not think there's very much of a different sort of cultural difference between them and Australia. But I definitely found, for example, New York to be quite different to what I was expecting, whereas London, I guess, quite similar to Australia. So I think from a personal front, just having those experiences being able to do that while working, so not sort of just in a holiday short context, I think is really great from a personal experience as well.
Yeah, I think you definitely get a very different experience than what you do on a holiday once you actually live somewhere.
Yeah.
And I guess on the flip side, what were some of the challenges you faced in working, I guess, in each of these cities or just working overseas in general?
So I think particularly when I went to New York, I mean, I was still a reasonably junior lawyer. I think I was about 3 years qualified at that point. And I did sort of get thrown in the deep end in an area of law that wasn't necessarily my specialty. So I'm a finance lawyer. Before I went to New York, I mainly did corporate, and New York, I was doing project finance and projects generally, and it wasn't sort of my area. And New York law is actually quite different. And New York drafting style, American drafting style, is very different to Australia. They haven't taken on yet the simple drafting approach that the UK and Australia have taken on. They've still got very convoluted, three-page paragraphs and things like that. So the style was very different, the area of law was different, and the personalities at the firm and the work style was quite different. So I found that very confronting, and quite challenging at first. But that being said, in sort of London and Hong Kong, I think it was a bit more like Australia in terms of the working style and the documentation. So I felt a little bit more comfortable once I left New York and went to London and then Hong Kong, in terms of getting back to sort of my roots in terms of corporate finance and acquisition and leverage finance, which I really enjoyed. And also just the plain English language drafting, which I think is a real gift under the UK and Australian models that America still hasn't sort of for one way reason or another picked up yet.
Yeah, thanks, Maddie. Super interesting to hear about the different work styles. I've heard that the New York system is a little more formal. Would that be correct?
A little bit. I mean, I guess from their drafting style, it's very like provided further hitherto, that kind of oldie-worldy language. And it's very much sort of like you can only read the documents if you're a lawyer. But in terms of their approach, like it wasn't like the office was particularly formal and everyone in sort of three-piece suits or anything like that. Everyone was still just working hard, getting on with it, having a laugh. So it was still really nice from that perspective, but just very different, I guess, and also to my expectations. I sort of thought that culturally America would be just like Australia. Just I don't know why, maybe based on the movies or something. But certainly in New York, I certainly found that even silly small things like in Australia, I think, and in England, often someone will sort of hold the door open for you if you've gone in after them. Whereas I found in New York, everyone was so busy, like they just shut doors in your face, and it was all just really intense and fast. And there's not the same level, like I think in England and Australia, people might ask you to do something. And they'll say a lot of pleases and thank yous and, oh, would you mind terribly if you did this for me? And what they mean is do it, do it now. But they say it with all this nice fluffy stuff around the outside. Whereas in America, they'll just be like, do it now. And it's the same meaning and they're not being rude or anything, but it's just a different style. So I think when you come from Australia or London where you're used to the extra fluff around the outside, when people are really direct with you, you sometimes think maybe they're angry at you or you're in trouble, but actually they've just got a much more direct style. So yeah, I certainly found. I tell anyone of my colleagues or friends who moved to New York, I'm like, just be wary. It's a slightly different style. They're not angry at you all the time. They're just very direct, and they often don't like the sort of the English style of, fluffing around the edges and saying all the pleases and thank yous.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. Good to keep that in mind. Do you have any advice for students who would want to pursue doing law internationally?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think it's a really good experience for anyone to have. I mean, it's different for different areas of law. So I think if you want to go international, it's probably a good idea to sort of start your career at a big firm, because a lot of the big firms like Ashurst, do have international offices. So the chances of being able to go on an international secondment, for example, are enhanced by being at a big firm that has those links and those opportunities. If you do start at a smaller firm, or you're in family law or something a bit different, it's probably a little bit harder to extrapolate that experience and go overseas. Not impossible, but it's just probably less of a well-trodden path. So if you're really keen on it and you are keen on corporate law, I would recommend investigating working at sort of one of the big firms with international links, like Ashurst and others. And that will give you sort of a pathway that's probably a little bit cleaner and like as I said, more well-trodden than if you had to sort of just try and do it yourself. And arrange it somehow bilaterally with other firms in other countries.
Yeah, that's some great advice. I'm sure our listeners who no doubt have ambitions for their law career can really take that on board.
And we know that you're now a partner at Ashurst. So what does a regular day look like for you?
It's kind of funny. I think it's like regular days probably aren't a thing anymore. It's very different sort of depending on the day or week. But look, as a partner, we still do a lot of the same work that you do sort of, as a senior associate. Like we're not sort of, oh, once you become partner, see you later. We're not drafting documents anymore. We'll just get everyone else to do that and we'll sit around and drink whiskey and delegate. We're very much still on the tools at Ashurst, particularly in the banking team. You know, we kind of love our clients, we love the deals, so we're sort of still on everything. But there is, certainly an added element once you become partner of, business management and team management and, fee proposals and other things that maybe the administrative side of the business that you don't appreciate when you're not a partner. And that certainly was, everyone told me that was going to happen, but I didn't appreciate, I guess, the extra work and the difference in the work that you would do as a partner on top of your day-to-day legal work. But it's good to sort of have something extra there, something a bit different, while still being able to really stay on the tools, stay close to your clients, and stay doing the work that you obviously enjoyed to make partner in the first place.
Yeah, and was there anything about Ashurst that drew you to move to Ashurst, or something that stands out about Ashurst as a firm for you?
Yeah, when I sort of actually started my career at DLA back in the day in Sydney, and they were lovely. But when I sort of got really serious about finance and wanted to make sure I was at sort of a top finance firm, that's when I moved to Blake's when I was a bit younger. Net Blake's now Ashurst. And when I went overseas, I actually went with a different firm, Allen & Overy, just because at that time the Ashurst connection hadn't really happened yet, so there weren't clear pathways to secondments the way there are now. But when I was looking to come back from A&O, from Hong Kong, I only wanted to come back to Ashurst. So I remember it was quite funny when I was thinking about coming home. I told my boyfriend at the time, I said, oh, yeah, I'm going back to Martin Coleman's team. He's my fellow partner here. I'm going back to Ashurst. And he said, have you told them that? I said, oh, nah, there'll be a place for me. And he's like, maybe you should call them because you're pretty sure you're going to get that job back and you haven't actually spoken to them. So I quite remember sort of thinking, well, I better do that. And I called Martin. I said, I want to come home. Can I come back home to you? And he's like, oh, you should be able to figure it out. So for me, it was always going to be Ashurst. It was always going to be my old team here. I loved the culture here. I love the people. And even though a lot of the associates had obviously moved around in the 5 years I'd been away, the key sort of senior people were still there. And all the people that I met when I came back had that same great vibe that they had sort of when I left, because obviously the people at the top were sort of hiring the same kind of people and people who will get along with each other and have the same kind of focus, I guess, on being really great legal practitioners and all that good stuff, but also being sort of mates and appreciating that we all get stuck in together. And, sometimes the hours are long and the work is hard, but we kind of band together and have a laugh about it. So for me, I definitely wanted to go back to a firm that was, top tier, doing the best work. That's quite important to me. I don't think I'd be happy doing anything else. But once that sort of box is ticked, because obviously there's a lot of good firms like that in Australia, the choice for me was about sort of the culture and wanting to come back to the team that I really loved. So yeah, it wasn't going to be anything else for me when I was coming back.
Yeah, thank you. And as a financial lawyer, is there a particular case or transaction you feel stands out for you? I think students always like to hear examples.
Well, in finance, I guess we, it's funny when you talk to friends stuff and they're like, what cases are you working on? And we're very much front end. I'm sure people find it very boring, but we don't sort of go to court, or unless something goes wrong, in which case we hand it to the insolvency team and say, good luck with that. we're sort of very much at the front end. So we're really about, facilitating people getting money to do things they need to do for their businesses. And I really like that actually, because it kind of means that even though there's someone on the other side, the goal of your client and the other side's client is the same. Like, our client, if we're acting for the bank, wants to lend money, or if we're acting for the borrower, they want to borrow money, and the other side wants to also lend or borrow money. So we both have the same goal. It's just kind of how you get there, which I really enjoy. I don't think I'd be very good at being a litigator where, it's very acrimonious. Look, there's lots of exciting transactions. I know one I did in New York involved Chicago parking meters, and it was sort of my first couple of months in New York, and it actually was very acrimonious because of the way the structure was set up. And I got sent to Chicago with the partner, and we were in these all day meetings with sort of the Chicago mayoral office and all their lawyers and, all of our clients or investment banks, and sort of nutting out in real time amendments to these documents to make them work for the city, because the way they'd been structured just weren't really working for the city. And I had to sit down with the internal guy at the investment bank, who's sort of a numbers guy, and I'm very much not a numbers person. And we had to sit down all weekend with sort of a whiteboard, and he had sort of tried to, we had to like translate, I guess, between words and the numbers. And he was sort of doing the number side, I was trying to do the word side, and we were ordering in together, and he was lovely. And we just sort of had this weekend of trying to convert numbers to words. And it sounds very, very lame and nerdy, but it was actually, I think sometimes on transactions, I had another one in Singapore where you spend all weekend kind of negotiating in real time with like 20 parties around a table. And that stuff is actually, it's obviously exhausting and, you know, it's hard on your private life sometimes, but when you are in those environments where you're in real time negotiating things, it's urgent, there's lots of people around the room having real conversations and really discussing, you know, the business of a transaction, that's actually really exciting. So yeah, that's anytime a transaction does that. We've had a couple in Australia as well, like the Healthscope acquisition that we did in 2019, acting for Northwest when they bought half the hospital portfolios from Healthscope. Very similar, very high intensity, lots of moving parts, acting really closely with the client. You really feel like a trusted advisor and you're really helping them make important business decisions. That's kind of, that's where I nerdily kind of have the best time on deals.
Yeah, no, it sounds awesome. And I'm kind of glad that you don't have to be a numbers person and you can still do big financial
transactions. Oh, yeah, 100%. Like, I didn't do commerce at uni. I did arts with my law. So I did like history and politics and law. And I mean, I think I did methods at school because I thought I might do commerce at uni, but I wasn't great at it. And so, yeah, numbers are not my strong suit. And in fact, I think in our team, only a couple of people have actually done like either a finance or a commerce major with their law. Most people have done in arts or something else. So certainly I think, and this is a good message generally, I think for whatever area of law you choose, I never thought I'd go into finance. It was my last choice as a summer clerk when I put down my preferences at DLA. I did my clerkship in Sydney, so it was a full summer and you did two different rotations over like a 9-week period. And banking was my last choice. So I think IP, commercial technology or something was my first choice. And they said, look, we're going to give you your first choice and your last choice, but some people are getting their two mid choices. So, you know, it's good for you. It's whatever. And I did finance first and I loved it. And I really didn't like IP and technology and commercial. And I've never done anything except finance since. I did paralegaling in finance. I graduated into finance. I got pulled out of the grad program and stayed in finance. So I never thought I'd like it. I was never a numbers person, but then I loved it as soon as I kind of got into it. So I think everyone should keep an open mind, definitely. At uni, when you're thinking about what you want to do for clerkships or other kind of apprenticeships and anything, that, you know, pick a variety of things because you just don't know. I think at uni, you might think you have an idea of what you want to do based on some subjects you've done or friends you know or families and stuff, but it might be that you end up loving some other area completely and you just don't know who you're getting. Yeah.
No, that's really good advice. Thank you.
Moving on to a bit of a different question, given you are a female partner at Ashurst.
We often hear there's particular challenges that pertain to being a female in law. And I guess for any female listeners, what advice would you give to women who are entering the field or have concerns about these issues?
Sure. I mean, look, it's a tough one. I think things are definitely getting a lot better. Even from when I started, but, you know, well before that, sort of the 80s and 90s, I'm sure there were, you know, really significant barriers to entry and then barriers to promotion. But we are certainly going through a period now and, you know, Paul Jenkins, our managing partner, you know, is a committed to change partner and is very heavily involved in making sure that Ashurst going forward is promoting women and focused on diversity. So it's definitely getting a lot better. And, you know, I mean, when I was promoted, I think there was more than 50% of women in that promotion round, and it's been more than 50%, I think, for the last couple of years. And we're also getting better on making sure that women are in equity, because it's not just about women making partner. You know, within a lot of firms, there's a salaried partner concept and an equity partner concept. And, you know, Ashurst is really working hard to actually make sure that it's not just, oh yeah, we're putting women into partnership, then they never kind of go anywhere. They're really focused as well on looking at why there might be less women in the equity pool and trying to do things about that. So I definitely think that things are getting better, which is great. But, you know, I think you've got to back yourself. You've got to work hard. My personal view is that, you know, you're in control of your own destiny. And, you know, if you sort of believe that, oh, women can't make it in a particular industry because, like, you know, in banking, like I'm the only female partner in, you know, Melbourne and Sydney in banking actually at Ashurst, and there's not that many of us in the market. But if I looked at that and said, oh, there's not many in the market, so I'm never going to make it, never really tried. It's a bit like women not trying in engineering or not trying in math sciences, thinking, well, there's not many people, so I'm not going to try. It's like, no, you can definitely make it. You know, it's hard work for sure in a big firm in any area, but it's not like, oh, if you're a woman, you can only do employment law and you can't do family law and you can't do banking or M&A. It's definitely not the case. So back yourself, work hard And if it's something that you want, then go for it. And, you know, it's really tough also when people want to have families and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, you know, we have parental leave. It's not just mat leave anymore. So, you know, your partner hopefully can stump up and do their bit as well. So it's not all just, you know, on women anymore to take the burden of child rearing as well. So I think it's, if you want to go for it, and it's not for everyone, like partnership at a law firm is not for everyone. Like, it's not some holy grail that everyone should aspire to. Like, it's hard and it's not sort of what everyone wants. But if it is something that you want and you want to really go gangbusters, don't be held back just because you're a woman and you think maybe there's particular areas of law that you won't be able to excel in because of the hours or because it's too masculine. Just back yourself and go for it. And I think that there are certainly opportunities, and the barriers to entry are certainly not what they were. And we've just got to keep pushing and just showing that, you know, we're more than capable of doing it. And in my personal view, you know, better sometimes at managing things. We bring something different to the table. And that's the key thing about diversity, is that all the studies show that if you bring something different to the table, actually businesses perform better. So it's not even about a diversity for the sake of diversity. It's actually diversity for the sake of business doing better. And that's, you know, better for everyone.
Yeah, 100%.
Thank you for that. I think as a female and for our listeners, you've really given some important insight into being a female partner at a top tier law firm. From your experience and knowing what you know now, what do you think a lawyer will look like 10 years from now?
Oh, God. I might actually start to go gray in 10 years' time. I'm actually secretly looking forward to that because, you know, I have to spend a lot of time and money in the salon going blonde. But if I just naturally go gray, then I can just stop having to do that. Look, I don't know. There's obviously a lot of disruption. You know, I know this personally, obviously working at Ashurst, we have a lot of sort of legal technology, Ashurst Advance, our consulting business. Like, we're shifting certainly into the technology space. So I certainly see that all around me here. And I can only assume that's going to keep growing. And that's, you know, that's really exciting. And we've got dedicated people, dedicated partners, teams all working on that. And so it's pretty cool to be a part of that environment. But I think there'll always be lawyers. We're a bit like cockroaches, you know, we'll be there at the end of the nuclear war. People will always need lawyers. And at the end of the day, you can't take away someone's sort of, you can't completely replace the skills that lawyers have with computers. You can do a lot of streamlining and a lot of helpful services and bring technology to the field in that area. But, you know, I think we'll always need smart people, bright people to lead the charge on things. So I think it'll look different. There'll be more of a focus on technology, but in 10 years' time, you know, we'll still have banking partners, we'll still have litigation, we'll still have, you know, big operations that require actual physical humans using their brains. You know, it's not just a matter of it is bodies in seats and so we can replace them with computers, you know. There's valuable work that we do that involves sort of our brains, and there's also that human element as well in terms of understanding a business and understanding what your client's trying to get out of something that I think means we'll always have a job and a role in society, I hope.
Yeah, thank you for that insight into what you think lawyers in the future might be. I'm sure all our listeners are hoping they will still be here. So just for our last question.
If you were able to go back and give yourself a piece of advice before you began your legal career, what would it be?
That's a tough one. I guess, you know, my pathway to be here was not quite exactly what I thought it would be. I think that, you know, when I was, I'm sure like a lot of students who would be listening to this, you know, like I really excelled in school and I did really well at uni. I just thought I was the kind of person who I thought I'd just walk into whatever job I wanted. You know, I'd get the clerkships I wanted. I'd walk straight into like Freehills or whatever, you know, and I'd just have that career. And I just sort of always thought that would be a bit of a walk in the park for me because I'd always done well. I'd studied hard and I always got the benefit of my studying hard. And then that sort of actually didn't happen for me with clerkships. And, you know, some few things happened here and there. I sort of didn't get exactly what I wanted. And so my pathway to sort of eventually be a partner at a top tier firm like Ashurst was a bit different. And I sort of moved a couple of times and I sort of worked my way up and I proved myself in the context of outside university to be able to get those jobs. So I think that I'd tell myself back then, because I know that I was quite distressed about it when I was going through the clerkship process, that I'd tell myself not to worry and that things will work out and that there's lots of different pathways. And I think this is true for students as well coming into uni. There's lots of different pathways to get what you want. So, you know, I had a friend at school who, you know, he didn't get a great sort of enter score, as it was known then. I don't know what it's called anymore. And he sort of took a year or so off, and then he went to uni and did an arts degree, and then smashed that and then did a law degree. And so he didn't get into the law until like quite a few years after me, but he's smashing it with senior associate at Freehills, has now gone to the bar, and he's amazing. You know, married to a doctor. Shout out to James. But he's, you know, he wouldn't have had that tradition. Like when he was going through school, I'm sure there were some teachers who were like, oh, this guy, he's just going to be a joker. But, you know, it took him a little bit longer to figure out what he wanted, and then he's just smashed it. So I think I'd tell myself that there's not, just because you don't have that clear path that you sort of thought, you know, when you were 18 or whatever that you'd have, doesn't mean that you're a failure. It doesn't mean that you're not going to get there. And actually getting there is quite fun. And you'll experience lots of different things by working in different places or, you know, living overseas. It's not just about the end goal. Because if it's just about the end goal, you get there, you're like, well, what have I actually, you know, what have I done? How have I gotten here? Has it been a great experience? And maybe actually it's a better experience if you sort of go the windy route to where you ultimately want to be. So that's probably what I'd tell myself.
Yeah, definitely good to keep in mind. We, a lot of us will be facing clerkship applications this season. So definitely good to keep the bigger picture in mind.
Yeah.
So that is the end of our questions. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule today. It's been a privilege to learn about your career and hear your valuable advice.
No worries. Thanks, Mimi. It's always good to chat.
Thank you for listening to our fifth episode of the Think Global series. To learn more about what Maddie discussed today, please see our Facebook page for further links.